Welcome back to 32 Fans. I'm Alex Chester. With me, as always, is Wheels Wienerker. Wheels, you are the reigning Renapoli Feud champion, so congratulations.
Yeah, I usually don't win those games when I play against Rob, so what an honor.
Well, you won because of Steven Fischbach.
Well, no, but I crushed it in... I put it down.
And Nicole Horn.
Nicole was very good, but I put down an all-time performance in the Fast Money's spot.
Yeah, I mean, going for... Like, Monopoly had 66 out of 100. I skewed it so that Fast Money would almost certainly be won.
Somebody said you messed up the math. Somebody said I only got 170, went out 190, and that, so I didn't hit the 250.
Oh. Well, whatever. Sorry. Yeah, the PowerPoint sort of hit the fritz, and so I was doing it by hand, and... It's sort of like when you're hosting, you know, the commissioner of a fantasy football auction.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much stuff going on that you can't even concentrate on all at all on your team.
Yeah, it's annoying. Yeah.
And it's sort of the same way. Like, running that podcast, I was trying to do that game. I was trying to do so many things. I was deflecting attacks left and right. And so it was hard to really focus on anything. You know, it seems like people liked it, so that's good.
Yeah. No, yep. Very popular. I'd say maybe the most sort of controversial shows we've done on Renap are the TV theme song bracket and this. Like, you probably think every week we just get like 10,000 ats on Twitter, and that's just how life is. But, you know, we need Chester to come on to really get so much controversy.
Yeah, I didn't realize I was so controversial. But let's jump in to more controversy. You, a couple of weeks ago, you started ranking, I've got nothing to do with this, the top 50 sports announcer calls of the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
We did 50 to 41 last week on the patron side. Now on the regular feed, we're dropping 40 to 31. I think we'll drop 50 to 41 here as well so that people who are listening to this will know what they miss.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to say, I'm looking at 40 to 31. I'm very underwhelmed. I think this episode is worse than last week's. But I'll rip you a new one as we go through.
Well, maybe that was my plan to get people in with some really good ones. I will say from 25 to 1... It's perfect. Like, there's
They're all good.
From 25 to 1.
We haven't got that far.
I'd say, yeah, this week and the first half of next week, it's like one on, one off. I listen, you could fight me on individual ones. I know the first one we're starting with is Dynamite. So let's start there. I'm going to take you back to an NCAA tournament game between Syracuse and Vermont. Do you remember this game? Four seeded Syracuse.
Of course I do.
13 seeded Vermont. A classic NCAA tournament game. It's going to be our first experience with the great Gus Johnson. Gus Johnson sadly does not do March Madness anymore. Really, Gus Johnson was like early internet, like the pre-Twitter internet, was like the most popular person in the world. There are certain people like Gus Johnson, Gilbert Arenas, who like owned the early part of the internet, but like barely exist now on the internet. They just flew too close to the sun too quickly. Gus needs to come back. If there's ever March Madness again, Gus needs to come back and do March Madness. All he does is like a couple, you know, he does one college football game a week on Fox, which is never like the main game. It's always like a Pac-12 game. And he does a couple like college basketball. He's so out of it, Gus. We need Gus back in our lives. Anyway, this was one of Gus's finest moments. It's not the only Gus clip on the list, but let's watch what happens between Syracuse and Vermont in the 2005 NCAA tournament, the first round of 4-13 matchup. And we're in overtime now. It's 56-55 Vermont looking for the upset.
Yep. All right, let's watch.
Now Vermont pulls it out. Fans chanting. UVM. Let me tell you once again, comes down to fundamentals.
Oh, my goodness! Sorrentine hit that one from the parking lot. And Vermont has a 59-55 lead. 106 to go in OT.
From the parking lot. I mean, that is like Steph Curry range. Back then, you never, ever saw that. Now, because of Steph Curry and Dame Lillard, like, people are, like, spoiled.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, fine. He hit, like, a 35-foot shot to win. Like, you know, we've seen Dame Lillard do it to win playoff games in the NBA. No. That never, ever,
It will be hard to explain to, like, our children that this was, like, an absurd shot. Like, if he misses that, like, the coach calls a timeout and, like, never plays him again. That's how crazy it was. But, yeah,
it
it's a good point.
Bonkers.
All right, who is in that game?
I mean, look, that's a great one, obviously. Gus Johnson, always great.
Yeah, so Hakeem Warrick in that game, 21-12 with 10 turnovers, so a triple-double. I guess the 10 turnovers against Vermont, like you said, should have been a clue that maybe it wouldn't happen for him, like most Syracuse grads in the NBA. Taylor Coppenrath, he was a hero of March who did not play in the NBA. I think TJ Sorrentine, those guys were both like very good European players, if I remember correctly. But nobody from this game really goes on to a serious NBA career. Warrick plays a lot, but he's never good.
Yeah, he had a fine career in the NBA. He's not a star, but, you know.
Yeah, no, he was drafted pretty highly.
If you had to
right?
guess his career earnings, I'm going to say $38 million.
He might have signed a big contract, yeah, because it was still when size was exciting.
Do you want to go over or under my call of 30?
I'm going to say over. If he signed a big contract, yeah. It'll be over.
Yeah, he probably played, what, like 7 or 8 years at least? Mm-hmm. So I'm probably actually too low.
Decent rookie deal and then one solid contract and then never gets a third contract. That's my guess.
Yeah. Let's see. My computer is being very slow, really amping up the drama here. Only $21 million.
Yeah, maybe we went too high. What was the second contract?
Yeah, never made more than 4.2 in a season, so tough times for Hakeem Warwick.
Oh, sorry. Okay, yeah, I guess he never got one of those like 3-year, $32 million contracts that was regretted within a week. Oh, well.
Yeah, he got – it looks like he signed a four – so he got his rookie contract, and then he signed one contract after that for looks like about four for 15.
Okay. All right.
So whatever. Not bad.
I'd take it. Yeah. It's $15 million more than I've earned in the last year.
He can work on the wrong side of that one. But yeah, he had a better professional career than TJ Sorrentine. So congrats to him. This next one is okay. I'm not going to complain as much as I am for some of the later ones you have on the list, which is this is like a very famous moment, but the call is not that great. But tell us what it
is. I'll tell you why I like the call after we hear it. So number 39 is a game between the New York Yankees and Elaine Benes' Baltimore Orioles.
The 1995, am I correct?
96 ALCS.
96, okay, yeah.
The 95 ALCS would not have...
It features someone who's basically our exact age, is he not?
Oh, no, the 95 ALCS did have the Yankees, but it was against the Indians, right? Because the Indians... Yes, yeah. Jeffrey Meyer is our exact age. He's our contemporary, a 1983 boy.
Fellow Jew from Long Island, I would assume.
I don't think he's Jewish. I don't think he's Jewish, Jeffrey Meyer.
There's no way he's not Jewish.
I'm pretty sure he was not Jewish. I feel like we would have taken credit from... Hold on. And there would have been, like, anti-Semitism. Hold on. Jeffrey Meyer...
Yeah, he's in a book about American Jews in baseball, so.
I guess he is Jewish. All right.
Jeffrey Meyer, fan and 10th player, American Jews in America's Game, Voices of a Growing
What do you think Jeffrey Meyer's
with
up
Meyer
to now?
Conducted for the book, discusses Meyer's American Jewish baseball and life experiences from youth to the present.
He's
from New Jersey, by the way.
Yeah.
Went to Wesleyan like my dad. I actually knew that. He played baseball there. I knew that. All right. He's baseball. He's Wesleyan's career hitter leader. All right. Okay. So let's now that we've spoiled it for everybody, it's Jeffrey Meyer robbing a home run robbing from the Orioles a home run to gift a home run.
Tarasco is the
whatever. I mangled the syntax there. If you know what this is, if you don't know what this is, then
well, I think a lot of the younger listeners have never heard of this play. It was so famous when we were kids, but it went away.
All right. So let's listen to the call, and then we'll explain the play.
Yeah. Last time up, he stranded two. The Yankees have left 10 men on base, including the bases loaded in the seventh. And two runners in both the fifth and the sixth. In right field, Tarasco going back to the track, to the wall. And what happens here? He contends that a fan reaches up and touches it. But Richie Garcia says
it's such an easy catch for Tarasco.
Yeah.
You know?
No, it's a real robbing. It's not one of these 50-50 plays also.
So, again, like last time we did this, in the show notes, we will include links to all 10 plays on YouTube. Because these are really more enjoyable as a video than as an audio.
Absolutely.
But Akiva, in case there's a listener who's only a listener, not a watcher, tell them what's happening.
Armando Benitez is about to pummel an umpire. Yeah. Benitez is a scary guy.
Tell the listeners what just happened.
Okay, so Derek Jeter hits a deep fly, but Tony Tarasco is under it, under the nobody beats the Wiz sign, speaking of Seinfeld.
By the way, that ball must have been in the air a while, because Tarasco's not running. He's standing there calmly, casually.
Yes, very straight. Well, I don't think the old Yankee Stadium right field was that deep, but yeah, it's a good point.
It's a short porch.
It's a weird look for the outfielder to be under, like, waiting for a catch with his butt on the fence for, like, four seconds. And the ball is falling down. He is easily going to catch it. A fan reaches over. Takes that hit away. It takes Jeter's ball.
13-year-old Jewish boy.
Yes.
Celebrating his bar mitzvah at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, happy bar mitzvah. He's not even 13 yet. And he steals the ball from Tony Tarasco, and chaos ensues. I like the call because Costas gets so pedantic immediately. He contends, he never stops speaking for a second. I loved Costas' call here. You said to me, oh, you just picked famous calls. I really didn't do that. I believe there are either zero or one clips from the Super Bowl in the entire top 50. Like, I really did not just pick famous games. There's a lot of regular season games. This is a semi-famous game, but it's also mostly been forgotten, and I just I wanted to get a little Costas in here. Although I do think we will see Costas one more time in the, but for a different sport, we will see Costas later in, yes, in the rankings. All right, so that was Jeffrey Meyer at 39. We have not we had hockey, but we have not had the NHL yet, right? We had Olympic hockey at 47, Sidney Crosby's golden goal. This you will not be able to argue. This is a wonderful call. But I did break my rule. I only do it about three times during the series. Because in the NHL, Alex, I'm sure you know this, you get your local announcers until the Stanley Cup Finals, right? For the early season, for the early round playoff games, your games are like, if you're a Ranger, if you're the Rangers and you're in the second round of the hockey playoffs, your games are on MSG, right?
No, they play them nationally. They play them on ESPN.
But they're They're blacked out locally, and you get the MSG version.
Okay, so you have to realize that I've literally never lived in Minnesota during these.
Yes, I realized that while we spoke. But yes, because I know
So I have no idea. Because
we have other calls like this too.
I watch the Wild in the playoffs, mm-hmm. but I watch every Wild game in the playoffs. Back in college when they went to the conference finals, it was on ESPN. Now it's on NBC. But yeah, but I'm watching national now.
So this is the rare local TV playoff call, and this is one of two in the countdown, but the only one tonight. Do you know Jack Edwards?
I mean, I'm familiar with him.
So Jack Edwards
was the announcer for the Bruins.
Yes, he was a big SportsCenter anchor. He wasn't one of the biggest ones, but he was like when SportsCenter was at its absolute apex, and then they had him be the voice of the 2002 World Cup. And the truth is, I could have included, and maybe I'll put it in as like a bonus. In one of the other ones, he has an amazing call when the United States beats Portugal, stuns Portugal to open the 2002 World Cup, and he yells, "Mine eyes have seen the glory," like totally unironically. So I always love Jack Edwards. He did not make it at ESPN, but he's you know, maybe the most famous or one of the most famous hockey announcers. An insane homer, goes totally over the top. This is different. The clip I gave you, and you could maybe include both if you want. You just see him. I like watching him. The play is in the background. There's a TV. But what's going on in this series is, this is from May 13th, 2013, Game 7, the Boston Bruins, Toronto Maple Leafs. It's 4-1 Maple Leafs. The Bruins tie it up, and here's what happens next. Okay?
Marchand to Bergeron, the drive save, rebound is loose. Sagan kicks it loose. Bergeron scores!
Funny because his suit is buttoned up the entire game.
Yeah.
So formal.
Yeah, so, yeah. Well, they are on TV a lot. But I love how animated Jack Edwards gets. Also, like, how much money is in... I know this is a TV game, but, like, I always wonder, like, how many people are listening to, like, the Islanders game on the radio? Like, is it even worth sending, like, two... You got two play-by-play guys, a producer, multiple tech people, easy. Like, who's making money off hockey games on the radio? It always blew my mind in 2020.
Well, I mean, honestly, and it's sort of the same, frankly, with like NFL games. I think that the purpose of the radio announcers is for embedding their local audio over the video clips on YouTube and on SportsCenter and on Twitter, et cetera, et cetera.
I don't think that's the main
purpose.
When
there's a big play.
Because they've always existed.
Have you ever listened to a Jets game on the radio?
Yeah, in my life, of course. Like, you're stuck, you know, back in the old days, like, you'd go somewhere, you'd stuck many games.
Yeah, but today, what circumstance today would you not have access to video?
Yeah, I would like, if the internet was down.
We're not talking about
the old days. Yeah, if the internet's down and you live in New York, you could listen on the radio. That's really the only answer. Or you could watch TV, so it doesn't matter. So there's really no
scenario. It's like when you're driving, but now when you're driving, you got a screen in your hand.
Yeah, so. No, it doesn't.
Not that I'm encouraging people to watch, look at their phones while they're driving, of course.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
I will say that the only I sign up for Sirius Radio every fall specifically for the purpose of having access to the radio calls of every single NFL game. So I just said no one does it. And so when I'm driving around on Sunday afternoons, I enjoy it a lot.
Okay.
Actually.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
So all right. That guy. I like to mix up. You know, the sports, we have double-digit amount of sports on this list. It's not all football and baseball. But this is our best horse racing clip, in my opinion, to pick. And this, we're going to the 2015 Belmont Stakes. And we are looking for the first Triple Crown since 1978. So we got 37 years since Affirmed won the Triple Crown in 1978. There's been
We've had a lot of teases. We've had a lot of, you know, they get the first two.
They get the first two and miss, I think, like six times it's happened since then at least. And then here is American Pharoah, owned by Ahmed Zayed. And
member of the tribe.
Yes, yes, for sure. Orthodox or Orthodox adjacent. And trained by Bob Baffert. And here we go. Here's the down the stretch they come. American Pharoah Frosted Fromento.
Yeah, they call it the most exciting 2 minutes in sports, but we are going to give you the most exciting 40 seconds of the most exciting 2 minutes.
And American Pharoah kicks away. American Pharoah has opened up a two-length lead as they come to the top of the stretch. And Frosted has moved up into second, and they're into the stretch. And American Pharoah makes his run for glory as they come into the final furlong. Frosted is second with 1/8 of a mile to go. American Pharoah's got a two-length lead. Frosted is all out at the 16th pole. And here it is. The 37-year wait is over. American Pharoah is finally the one. American Pharoah has won the Triple Crown.
So, of course, this race takes place on Saturday.
Yes.
In midday.
Mm-hmm.
So I did not see it live.
Nope.
But I was walking down the street on the Upper East Side of Manhattan with my family. And I happened to run into someone I know, and he was dressed very, very well, too well for a Saturday afternoon. And it's not because he was coming from synagogue. It's because he was coming from like a fancy, horse racing watching party. And he screams across the street at me, "He did it! He did it! A Triple Crown!" And it was actually like, I was actually kind of excited, honestly. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I don't care.
That person is assuming way too much that, people care way too much about, you know,
I mean, but I clearly
racing.
Knew what he was talking about.
I know.
I mean, it was a big.
Was he a friend of the Zayet?
No, he was just a guy who wanted to have a social activity on a Saturday afternoon. People are getting together, go to the bar to watch.
Yeah, I guess that is cool. Like one of the cool things about horse racing, you know, is if you live in Kentucky or Pimlico, you know, if you live near Pimlico or, you know, if you want to see a Triple Crown in the New York area, you could just go. Like it's $2 a ticket, right? They just want people to come in and gamble, and there's 100-something thousand. So it's not like it gets sold out ever. I don't think. Like you could see.
Oh,
like,
I assumed it did.
No,
no,
you could see like an incredible sports moment. You could see a Triple Crown for a couple bucks. It's you know.
Yeah, I don't know how much you could see from like you know your.
That's a good point, but yeah, it's still I'm sure exciting. Like it's hard. There aren't
also,
a lot of other sports.
It's two minutes of excitement, and you're there for like 8 hours.
You could still gamble on. No, and it's not 8 hours. It's like an hour and a half, 2 hours, I think. And you could gamble on all of it. It's a good deal.
Yeah.
All right.
Hold on. I got to pause for a second. I got to give a prune to my baby. 1 second. Sorry.
Okay. Got to give a prune.
All right. So you got your horses. Mm-hmm. So you can check that box. You're trying to get as many different sports as possible. That's fine.
Yeah. It's all about representation. The horses were going to get jealous.
All right. This next one is a well-known, curmudgeon crank announcer.
Yeah. The biggest homer in American sports, possibly.
Yeah. So the Twins' biggest rival is the White Sox.
Mm-hmm.
Twins White Sox, well known as the most important rivalry in America.
Yeah, but you're
sports.
Not their their biggest rival is A, probably the Cubs, and then B,
Indians. The Cubs and White Sox they didn't play each other for 100 years.
They're their interleague rival. I think Brett is a White Sox fan. Let's get the White Sox rival rankings in the group chat.
I'm sure yes, because they deal with the big brother Cubs fans their whole lot.
You might not be top five. The Twins might be like after the Tigers
no
and
way.
Indians. Royals and Twins tied for.
There's no way they're outside the top two.
Let's see. We're gonna get.
Well, I mean,
Josh Cantor. Are you listening, Josh Cantor, White Sox fan? Let us know.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So Hawk Harrelson is a despised individual,
except by his own fans. You love him. He's like Bill Laimbeer. If he's on your team, you love him. If he's not, you don't like him. So this is a regular season White Sox Rays game in 2012. And this is a category we have, I think, one more of during the top 50.
How many people were watching this live?
I mean, look at the seats. Like you can see the numbers on every seat.
Oh no, I didn't mean in the stadium.
Oh,
in Tampa,
because that's
100. Because there the answer is like 6,000. I meant on television total, and still I'd say fewer than 100.
Well, I think is it like a late September game? Like if it's a late season game, which I think it was, zero. If they're both bad, anyway, this is an announcer meltdown, and this is a delight.
Yes,
let's play.
Okay,
to Dunn. Watch out. Oh, what are you doing? He threw him out of the ballgame. You gotta be beeping me. What in the hell are you doing?
You gotta be beeping me.
Beeping me.
What are you doing?
He said hell, though. I can't even imagine what the beeping would have been.
You gotta be kidding me. That is so bad. That is absolutely brutal.
Harrelson hates umpires so badly.
That is unbelievable.
Hates them. He hates them. Let's listen to this.
I'll tell you what. They have got to start making guys be accountable. That is totally absurd.
Absurd.
That just tells
absurd.
You he has to lose. Here's an umpire in the American.
What is your accountability plan,
Hulk
Harrelson?
Baseball. That's unbelievable.
That's great.
If you're not familiar with Hawk Harrelson, how do you think he feels about sabermetrics?
Well, obviously,
I bet he loves A.J. Przinsky, who's the catcher at the behind the plate in this play.
One was thrown,
plays the game the right way.
Him, but below the waist, that's
such
that's
a bad pitch
that
by
really
Jose
is.
Quintana also, if you're just listening. Like, he gets kicked out for throwing. It's literally behind. It hits him behind him, which you don't see often, like the back of the leg.
Yeah.
It's like, if he was trying to hit him, then he is not a very accurate pitcher. Which makes sense. Quintana always has, like, a 142 whip, even when he has a good season.
Yeah, it's hard to understand why someone would be so fired up about this thing. But that's Hawk Harrelson.
Yeah. I mean, it's rare that a starting pitcher gets the boot like that for something that's not completely egregious. But I get why he's mad. All right, so
I mean, who cares, honestly? Whatever. Fine. Great. Great job by you. All right, number 35. How is it this low? Let's just play it.
You think this should be like number one?
It's one of the most famous two or three on the list.
Yeah,
for sure.
But I don't go by fame.
I mean, it's a great. All right, okay. Let's. By the way, can I just say before I press play, I'm looking at like the freeze frame of the 0 second mark on this YouTube video.
Yeah.
The pitcher looks like someone's like 65-year-old like obese uncle.
I mean, who is it? Calvin Schiraldi? Who's pitching?
I honestly
here?
Have no. Yes, I think it is actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, he's pitching to Mookie. So.
Little roller up along first, behind the bag. It gets to Buckner. Here comes Knight, and the Mets win it.
Little three-year-old Kiwi would have been the greatest moment of his life.
Yeah, it would have been. If I was like 1 year older, could you imagine?
Yeah, I mean, look, my Twins won the World Series the next year. I have no recollection of it. So,
what do you know?
Be like 3 years older.
What do you know about Game 7? Because this is Game 6. The Mets win Game 6. Gets by Buckner.
Didn't they win like 6?
And by the way,
something?
It's always called gets by Buckner, but he says gets through Buckner. That's also one of the, you know, sort of forgotten things. Buckner handled this much better than say Bartman. I mean, Bartman never got paid to play baseball. But
there's a difference between a professional baseball player who makes an error and just a dude in the stands.
For sure. And I just thought it's a little underwhelming, and that's why it's on the list, but it's not number one. I have all the DVDs. I haven't watched them in many years, but, you know, the Mets, the NLCS against the Mike Scott-led Astros, an incredible series. And then this is, but what do you know anything about Game 7, the Mets-Red Sox Game 7 the next night?
I said, didn't they win 6-1, or am I making that up?
No, so the Red Sox actually go up 3-0. There was a rainout, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, the game is Saturday night, and then there's a rainout, so the game... allows the, what's it called, the pitchers to pitch. Bruce Thurst, I think, pitches, who was the game one starter, instead of Oil Can Boyd. And the Red Sox go up 3-0, and then the Mets score a whole bunch of runs. And the Mets win 8-5. It was 6. The Mets went up 6-3. The Red Sox scored 2 in the 8th. The Mets had 2, and then Orozco gets the save in the 9th. Strawberry hits a dinger, and Ray Knight famously hits a dinger also. But Game 7 not very well remembered. But all right, so you said you have a lot of problems with this list, but then there hasn't been anything on this list that doesn't belong in the top 50, in my opinion. I mean, maybe you could say the Jeffrey Meyer thing isn't great, but it's a famous moment, and it's a funny Bob Costas call. This is a little bit obscure for most fans. I have you ever seen number 34 before?
Have I ever seen it?
Yeah, the next one. We're going to college basketball, number 34, one of the great rivalries in sports, Duke and UNC. It's a 1995 game.
To be honest, I don't know. I open up the video. It's called Dick Vitale, Best Calls of All Time.
Yes. Okay. So we're going to see. Let me paint the picture.
So Duke
for you.
UNC, what year did you say?
It's 1995. February 2nd, 1995. Duke is having their, I believe they're 0-7 in the ACC. North Carolina is, and of course it would be nice if like these things were on the screen ever in the early 90s games and mid 90s games, but they're not. UNC is like a top 10 ranked team, and this is the worst Duke team ever. And we're in overtime, though. Duke is, this is like the biggest moment in ESPN2 history at the time by far. ESPN2 started. They had all these hip ads. If you remember, they had a very cool logo, the ESPN2 logo. Do you remember that at all? It was like very sloppy. It looked like, you know, a cool kid.
Yeah, they
drew
were trying
it.
To be like jeans and cool. Like
yeah,
ESPN2
it was trying to be like MTV for sports.
Now they're exactly identical in every
way. There's no difference. There's like ESPN2 then probably had its own like president of the network. Like it was so different. So this was like, hey, order ESPN2. And I remember I told my parents, like, please order it. But I do not believe we had it. I remember this game so well, but I must have watched it on SportsCenter that night because I don't think we had got it until, like, the next month or two. They just wasn't available on Cablevision in 1995. So Duke almost pulls off the upset in regulation. Now we're in overtime. And what was his name? George Zivic? Sergey, I forget that guy's name. Zubek is involved. And then, so North Carolina misses a free throw. They hit one up two, and now Duke is down three. They have 3 seconds left.
They got a chance. He lets it fly. Oh! Oh! I can't believe it! I can't believe it!
38-footer. Boom.
It was close to a three, but listen to Dickie V.
Is that Stackhouse?
Yes, Stackhouse and Wells. So one of the interesting things about this clip versus the other 49 is Dick Vitale is the analyst, and he just, when he wants, takes over the play-by-play calling on the biggest moments of the year, and there's nothing you could do about it. And he like becomes a fan of Duke also, which is pretty wild. But this was my favorite Dickie V moment. This like made ESPN2. This was like Video Killed the Radio Star.
Oh, okay. So I didn't realize that. So I was sort of wondering why. I mean, this is in the middle of a 14-minute-long video of great Dick Vitale calls. So I didn't know what made this different than all the other ones.
Well, I have the whole game. I cut from the whole game, but then I was like cutting a 3-hour clip. I figured it made more sense. There's a little more there, but yeah, I love when he says he wants to stay in the crowd. Like if it, you know, they must have played it on SportsCenter that night because I don't think I watched it live, but it hit an impressionable young Uncle Kiwi very very hard. Love Dickie V. There isn't a lot of like sports homerism. There's no biathlon clip or anything on the top 50, Chester. But I did put one sort of non-super, like the, you know, Olympics for most people, Olympic hockey is still mainstream. You're talking about NHL players, legendary players, one of the most famous moments of an iconic player's career, Sidney Crosby. I don't think anybody would have a gripe. This is like the 49 for you, one for me, but it is maybe one of the best calls on the list. So,
all right, this is USA women's cross country gold medal.
Yes, this is from the most recent Olympics, the 2018 Pyeongchang Olympics. Pyongyang, I don't know.
Okay, because when I saw this, by the way, on the list,
yeah,
it says Diggins, and I thought that this was Diggs, Minneapolis Miracle, and I was
that'll come on a later podcast. You should have thought it was Skylar Diggins from WNBA. We don't have any WNBA clips.
Yeah.
But anyway,
it's not Skylar Diggins. That's the only Diggins I know.
No, so this is Jessie Diggins from Afton, Minnesota. So the United States has never won a gold medal in only two sports at this point: cross country skiing and biathlon. They have one men's medal won by Bill Koch in about 1976, a silver. And this is a team relay, which is two people. It's not a full relay. It's a sprint relay. You're two fastest people. And so the winners are always Norway 1, Sweden 2, and then it's usually like Finland 3 and the U.S. coming in like 5th. But
so how far behind is Diggins when this video starts?
Okay, so it's there. What Diggins is like a young star for the Americans, and the other, so you each get 3 turns. So Diggins will be on laps 2, 4, and 6, and then the woman on laps 1, 3, and 5 is like 39 years old. It's the last race, basically, or the last month of her career. She's now battling cancer. I think she's doing okay. But Diggins is like the young blonde star that they're trying to like pump up and make into a big star. And right now they're even, but they're climbing up this gigantic hill, which you won't always, every cross country, slope or whatever, course is different. So
I can't fathom what would ever inspire someone to become a cross country skier.
It is really the hardest, I mean, other than biathlon, because you're also carrying a gun on your back.
You ski, right?
I don't cross country ski though.
No, but you downhill ski.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know what the worst part of skiing is? When you're at one lift and you decide that you want to go to another lift,
yeah,
and you have to like cross country ski for like
100%.
300 yards. No, it's miserable.
All the data says that there's two sports that are lapping all the other sports in terms of cardio, and it's cycling and cross country skiing. It's just insane. These people work out. like 6 hours a day every, you know, they cannot take a day off in the off season. It's literally like sometimes they'll be like, yeah, I only worked out like 900 hours and not 1200. And that's why I was like, went from second to 47.
And are they even making enough money to cover their expenses?
Oh, so yeah. In Norway and Sweden for sure. And then America, it's governed by the same Alpine Skiing Foundation. The cross-country skiers do much better than the biathletes because it's more of a professional operation. It's connected to actual, you know, alpine skiing. But Diggins is a big star now. But let's watch the last minute of this race. It's a little clearer on Twitter, but it's much shorter. So I got you sort of this is like a copy of a copy we're going to watch. The announcer is Chad Salmela, who knows Diggins very well.
I think these people are talking really quickly. They're like really hyperventilating.
Yeah. They're probably calling this in like a box in Stamford, Connecticut, if I know the Olympics also, because it's not a major sport. So Diggins is clearly in third. A lot of slipping. And again, just a medal would be incredible. It would be, you know, they haven't won, U.S. women have never won a medal. Norway fades.
I mean, he screams, "Here comes Diggins," as if she just won like 15 Super Bowls in a row. Like, Kiva, did you cry when this happened?
No, but I was screaming. I mean, I'll tell you, this race was at 5 a.m. Eastern time, but it was 9 o'clock. It was noon for me. And I remember thinking, like, oh, the U.S. might win this race. NBC, and I was watching the American feed, NBC was not showing it live on like, NBC Sports Network. Forget about NBC proper at 5. They don't show stuff. But
wait,
like,
so you could not see it on your
no,
television?
No, so I was watching it on the computer, because I watch,
but I'm saying, but, like, an American turns on the TV, they scroll through the various NBC channels.
Correct.
Unwatchable.
You could not watch it live. It was, you know, they played it up, you know, at 8 o'clock. They're like, ooh, we got a big thing here, and they played it. And they were going to play it even if she lost.
How do they do that in the internet age? It's so dumb.
It's very dumb. They're very dumb. And, you know, hire me, please. But, it doesn't make any sense. It really bothers me when they do stuff like that. The crazier thing, and this isn't a great call, I didn't include it, was when the snowboarder won the downhill skiing, or the Super G, which is a different type of downhill, different type of alpine skiing, gold medal, like, and it was totally shocker. They had already gone off the air and said, like, all right, the person, because the top 19 in downhill skiing are seeded, so they're like, all right, you know, 20 through 30 or 20 through 60, like, never win, so it's like, we're safe to go to another sport. But she was known to be a good story, like, just the person who's going to win, who's the best downhill snowboarder. It's like, you should show her. And I'm like, I'm going to watch it. So I, probably the only person on earth who, like, went to see, like, skier number 26 on NBCOlympics.com. And then she won the gold medal, which NBC was airing the event and didn't show. And then they had to go back and, like, they weren't even announcing it. So they had to go back and pretend to announce it as if it was live when it had already happened. They literally did not have a live announcer on the most iconic moment of the entire Olympics. They're morons.
Yeah. Hire you, please.
Yeah, hire me, please. All right, that was Here Comes Diggins. Let's go to a famous event. Maybe you think this isn't a great call. I wanted to get a little Chrissy B in here. Chris Berman. I'd say the two most important people to my entire childhood, Alex, were Chris Berman and Dick Vitale. So ESPN was very important to me. And I don't think the under 30 crew who's listening understands how big of a deal it was that Cal Ripken played in, you know, broke Lou Gehrig's streak and played in 2,131 and then eventually 400 more straight games, right? I think that we've almost forgotten about that.
Yep. Here's my issue with this one, though.
Yeah.
This is not, and this is true for both of these, the 32 and 31, the last two on our list today, they are extremely famous sporting moments.
Mm-hmm.
The calls are garbage.
No, I like both calls.
It's not
so let's. I like this call. I like the other one even more. The other one, the next one.
The other one's not even a call. I'm shocked by how subdued they are given what just happened, but we'll get to it in a second.
Okay.
All right, so let's watch 32. It's Cal Ripken. So this was the other annoying thing about this was, you know, so this was a big deal, and people a little bit younger than us won't realize. Like post strike, this was like, this is what broke.
What, can you pause for a second? Can you pause for a second? So, yes. Yeah. It was famously said that this saved baseball. Cal Ripken saves baseball. Yeah. It was the universal sentiment even at the time. And, you know, this was this bigger than 98 with Maguire and Sosa? No, I don't think ultimately it was. But at the time, it felt like the biggest thing that had happened in baseball in our lifetimes. You know, the strike
and
then this.
The issue with, as a celebration, the game, the moment is marked the first second the game starts, and so they decided, well, we're going to mark
the moment is marked when it's an official game.
Once the fifth inning, then the game can't be rained out, then it's an official game, so at that point, he's officially gets two.
I mean, there's a half-hour celebration during the game, if I'm not mistaken, if I remember correctly.
Yes, I watched this whole game. I'm sure everybody did. But it was such a weird thing that in the middle of the fifth inning, they stopped the game to have a celebration at that point.
We might watch a McGuire clip next week. McGuire gives a speech after he hits the home run during the game. He has a mic on the field and gives a speech. Like, they used to do this. Yeah.
He has to hug his son. He has to go to the sideline to hug the Maris family.
100%. Like, but McGuire literally gives a speech to the crowd at Busch Stadium. So I think he hit it at home. The idea of Chris Berman doing, like, the main game is pretty funny, too. But I guess he was their main announcer in the mid-90s for baseball.
Every pitch, there's about, 4,000 flashbulbs. That's conservative, isn't it, Buck?
I think so. You got to really be focused to concentrate with all those bulbs popping around you. But he goes to the plate with a definite game plan, and he'll stick to it. He doesn't deviate very often.
So impressive. It's the only time in Berman's career that he shuts up. Like, he pulls the Joe Buck or Jack Buck and lets it sit. I guess it's an okay call, but Berman's voice goes up like 50 octaves. What do you think?
The guy they cut to, is that Lou Gehrig's grandson or something?
I don't know. It's a good question. Yeah, I mean, I guess he probably wouldn't have any living kids, Lou Gehrig, by 95. But yeah, it was a big deal. Cal Ripken. I like that call, I remember. And then let's go to boxing. We have a lot of combat sports stuff. I don't think there's any UFC clips. If there's an incredible UFC, I can't imagine like Joe Rogan drops like an amazing UFC call. But if there is one, then I do have one spot that could be like an A and a B.
Yeah, so again, to me, that's a famous moment, not a famous call. And this next one is even more so. This next one is one of the most famous sports moments. And the call is like shockingly bad. And I think part of the reason is it was a nobody announcer because it was not expected that this was going to happen.
Yeah, and where is it? It's in Japan. It's in the Tokyo Dome. Like, no real announcers, is going there in 1989. Tell me when to press play.
Yeah, okay. Are we going to say what it is or no?
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah, so it's Mike Tyson versus Buster Douglas, 1990, February 1990, in the Tokyo Dome. I don't know how much I remembered about Tyson. I'm only 6.5 at this point. One of the weird things is, like, a lot of people our age found out what rape was from Mike Tyson, right? That was every day on SportsCenter for several years, his rape case. And it's like, you know, my parents or my parents' friends are like, why do they keep talking about rape on SportsCenter? I want to see, like, the Spurs, Blazers highlight. That's Mike Tyson's legacy, I guess. That and The Hangover.
All right, so Tyson against Douglas. This is, what round is this?
The 10th round. Douglas is a 42-1 underdog, and there's only two people in the fight. It's not like a horse race.
And a 42-1, that was like a couple of books where they actually had it. In most books, it wasn't even available to bet.
Yeah, you probably couldn't bet it, and it might have been a max, because like 42-1 is always a stupid, like, and he could lose on a technicality.
Not $10,000 on that.
Yeah, you could lose on a technicality at 42-1. Like, that's actually a great bet, even if he has no chance.
Yep.
So,
let's cut into the 10th round.
Okay.
One-eyed fighter. Brawling willingly just to try to get in the shot that will finish things.
Like, it wasn't one fluke punch.
What an uppercut by Douglas, and down goes Tyson.
Two, three, four, five,
and Tyson was, like, untouchable before this.
It's over.
It's over.
Mike Tyson has been knocked out.
Unbelievable. This makes Cinderella look like a sad story, what Buster Douglas has done here tonight.
Let's go ahead and call it the biggest upset in the history of heavyweight championship fights. Say it now, gentlemen. James Buster Douglas, undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
I would be willing to say it's the greatest upset in boxing history.
There seems to be a little pandemonium here.
In Las Vegas, they wouldn't even put up any odds on this fight.
Oh, yeah. So So you said it's underwhelming because I sent a clip and you said, no, I have a better clip. It's different announcers. That's why. I have a much better call for this.
You're a dope.
Yeah, well, hold on. So the clip that you sent me was not like the actual clip. It was like a later, like they had like this like stirring music in the background. It was like a movie clip version.
Yeah, but it's still the same one. I believe it's just the other announcers. Yes, it was like that, but that's why it was the only one I could find.
Yeah. So it's not a good call.
No, but the other call is a much better call. Can we at least play the other call?
But I gotta go find it.
Yeah,
now
you gotta go find it because you're an idiot who switched the announcers. That guy doesn't even speak. Of course, that's a terrible call.
Yep. All right. Okay. Fine.
No,
right, we'll give you a chance.
And I agree. I agree that it's awkward because this is.
Tyson, we've been looking for all night. So no matter what happens, we give a lot of credit to Buster Douglas for making this a big, big fight. Tyson trying to end it with one big shot again. He's down, he comes with the uppercut. Somehow or other, Buster throwing shots back. Hey, look at this! Look at Buster coming back! Did he fuck with the lights of Mike? I don't know, he shot him again! Oh, nice uppercut by Buster Douglas! It's up to seven and eight. He's not gonna make it. Unbelievable. Buster Douglas is the new heavyweight champion of the world. This has got to be, it's got to be one of the biggest upsets in the history of boxing.
This is a much better call. You think this was like dubbed in after?
I mean, listen to the stirring music. Of course, this is not what we heard when we were watching it live.
No, the music is put in. Every highlight clip, Alex, on YouTube has annoying music that you don't want over the announcers. That's not the telecast. Nobody's saying that. It's really
But the whole point of this series is the top 50 telecast moments.
I agree, but I couldn't find the better clip of it.
Well, I found the whole fight on YouTube, but you're saying it's the wrong announcer. So.
I think maybe that's like the international feed. Yeah, because that guy doesn't speak on the feed you played. It's really an unbelievable series of punches. Like, it's not a fluke win.
I gotta say, this is an underwhelming series of 10 to me. None of these are like amazing to me.
Okay, I'm gonna call my shot.
Other than Gets by Buckner. Gets by Buckner is, you know, obviously a big deal.
I'm gonna call my shot. Maybe like 30 to 28 next week will be meh. By the time we get into the lower 20s, there's not one that's not gold. I got some surprises in the top 20, but they're all good. There's not another bad one left. It's only gold once we get to like 25, 24. All right, so
all right. I will keep an open mind.
Bunch. Yes. All right, so what else? This is anything you want to talk about for a minute?
We're recording another podcast. We're recording a live podcast in about 20 minutes.
Yeah, we're going to try doing a live podcast. It might not even end up being a podcast. Who knows what the quality will be.
Yeah, we're trying out new things.
We're trying new things, yeah. Listen, we got to spice up our marriage after.
Chag Sameach to you, Yom Ha'atzmaut Sameach.
Yeah, Yom Ha'atzmaut Sameach. We got to try some... So you know what they're doing? They're opening up school here next week. Isn't that insane for K-3?
Yeah, with masks and stuff. How the hell are you going to have kids keeping masks on? It seems crazy.
My son doesn't even have to wear a mask out because he's 6. So he's going to have to wear a mask in school? I don't think so. I think you have to be 7 to wear a mask.
Aren't those the kids who are like the biggest carriers?
We don't know that. No, we're not sure if kids are big spreaders. We don't think. I mean, I don't know. Your wife's a doctor. But I don't think there's data that says that that's true. There was a lot of noise out of China at the beginning. That kids can't give it to parents. I don't know if that's true or not. It doesn't seem like kids are super spreaders, but who knows? We don't know anything. Every single thing we think we know now, when this is all said and done, we will realize was completely wrong. And like the answer was right out there. Like either, you know, complete whatever. Anything we're doing is either going to be 100% right or 100% wrong, and we won't find out till it's too late. But obviously, we're not set. Would your if like New Jersey said, all right, we're sending first and second graders back to school? Would you send your kid to school in kindergarten next week?
But I mean, it's an impossible hypothetical.
I mean, it's not impossible. You know, like we're doing it. It's. I mean, we're doing better than you.
You guys are in a much better situation.
But there's still a lot of cases.
Much stricter rules for 2 months already.
Yeah, but there's still a lot of cases for strict rules, which shows you like
way less than we have in New Jersey.
Way less. Way less. Well, we're in a similar sized place, and you know we have like less than 10% of the deaths that you guys have in almost the exact same population, and you're I think even more densely populated. If I'm not mistaken, certainly the big cities in Newark are extremely densely populated. But that's it. Anything else? Are you going to cut out your son's prune stuff from the podcast?
Do people need to listen to me going to get prunes for my son so he can poop?
Yeah. I don't think they need to. There's a lot of poop talk in the background. You should probably cut that out. It was funny.
Yeah, I'll cut that out. The poop talk stays right in the foreground of this podcast.
I'll say this. People mad at Chester. I did get a message from two different people about the Family Feud question. Said,
why are people mad at me?
Well, people were mad about some people were mad on the podcast about the questions you selected.
Yeah, but the crowd seemed decidedly on my side from what, you know.
I don't think that's true, but I'll say this. I got two messages. So here's what, people were definitely mad. I saw a lot of messages that said Chester was the worst host in Family Feud history. I did see a lot of that, positivity and negativity, but people were mad about the questions you picked. And that you changed the rules for money.
In our patron group, it was like 90-10 the other way.
Yeah, but now, you're there. You know,
that's obviously a different market.
You're there. Wait, but I'm going to say this. People said...
Yeah, but that's the point. I'm there, but you're talking about a crowd who's all like Akiva superstands.
Today's
Friday, and then all of a sudden everybody's switching their calendars.
There's very few Akiva superstands out there. I wish there was one. I wish there was one in this house. I wish there was one Akiva superstar in this whole thing.
Yeah.
But I don't even have an Akiva casual in here. I'll say this: people messaged me and said, "Why are you mad at Chester? I took the quiz, and all the questions were like that. All of them would have had an advantage to the
first of all."
So is that true?
I don't even throw anyone else under the bus. I didn't write the question.
No, I made that clear. But I thought that it was your fault. But now people are messaging and saying that all the questions were like that. I think I need to see the questions, and if we ever do this again, we could just easily get new questions.
By the way, these people are wrong. The questions were totally generic, and that's why they were worthless, because what's the point of having totally generic questions and wasting time serving them in the hours?
Because the interesting part is the people, Alex. It's the friends
Which
you
people?
Made along the way. We had an all-star crew, and some of them didn't listen to the podcast.
Akiva, you're not listening to me.
Yeah.
What was the point of the hours and hours and hours spent collecting questions, collecting answers, collating the answers? You can go on familyfeud.com and pull that right there if all you want is to hear generic questions and answers discussed by people from the RenApp universe.
Fair point.
Why did we make our own questions and answers?
Fair point. And Rob wanted that to happen. So
it had a relationship to these people in some way.
Rob wanted that to happen. So as usual, he ended up being right there. But...
Wait, no, he ended up being wrong. I think you're totally... Okay, I haven't seen the whole crowd, granted. But from what I've seen on Twitter... And from what I've seen, people copying.
Do you think Donald Trump also thinks he has like a 97% approval rating?
Akiva, the people who... Okay, maybe people just aren't tagging me. The people... And that's entirely... By the way, one person tagged me. Actually, I was about to complain to you, but I'm going to call him out on the podcast. Some asshole named Mark he tweets at Stephen Fishback. Loved hearing you on RenApp and would love to have you back. I'm sorry that at HS99 made your first appearance on the pod so convoluted. He's the first person who's been negative against me.
Well, how about this? You should look... Like, you're not tagged in the original tweet.
Who is this asshole? Why are you calling me out by name? Like, these are people who tweet like when one person criticizes someone else and they bring their name in on Twitter. Like, why are you doing that? You don't like how I did? Okay, fine. Fuck you. I don't care.
Well, hold on. Like, now you're going after individual listeners by name. That's crazy. But I'll say this.
He did it to me first. No, but honestly, I really don't care. But he was the first person I've seen who was on your side on this.
Maybe search the hashtag Renap because you're not tagged in the original podcast tweet and see.
Yeah. So I guess the people tagging me are the people like me, which or liked the job I did, which is fair.
Yeah. You shouldn't snitch tag if there's a bad host to Family Feud.
Yeah. Well, Mark snitch tagged me, and it's like I don't need this.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he's a big fan.
Yeah, but look, I mean, I know because I know how you work and, like, I know my role on the podcast. No matter what I'd done, I was getting knocked on. So if I had brought in totally generic questions, you and Rob would have been yelling at me, what the hell is this? This is nothing to do with RenApp. Why are you wasting our time? You could have just pulled questions from the website. Like, no matter what I did, I was going to lose. And I knew that, and I'm fine with that. And, you know, that's the fun. So, you know, Look, I have a wife. I'm used to that. You know, no matter what I do, I lose. I understand.
I think on the TV theme song podcast, you were the voice of reason, people thought. I don't think you were the heel there.
The listeners did, but you guys were bashing me the whole time and criticizing me. Why did you make these selections? And I kept explaining, I didn't make them. This was...
Yeah, you made bad selections, but people were on your side in the end, more than me and Rob. But this time,
well,
that's not
again,
the case.
Well, again, you know, you put a survey on your Twitter.
The decision to include questions that exclude multiple people from the podcast
is insane. Allie Lasher kept saying, there was not a single RNAP-specific question at all. There was a couple of RNAP-specific answers.
No, Allie Lasher was the most anti what you were doing of all nine people on the podcast.
But she kept pointing out, none of the questions were RNAP-specific.
The answers. Well, Kaya.
Yes.
Kaya said.
Oh, well, there's an objective person when it comes to me.
Kaya said you should have. Oh, she was loving it when Wiggler was tweeting anti-Chester stuff.
Yeah. Wait, he was tweeting it also?
Well, what did he tweet? He tweeted. Oh, no. See, you're not like literal, but he was joking around. He said you're his ops. You didn't see this? Oh, no.
Oh, he was saying it. I don't follow any of these RNAP people on Twitter, so I don't know what's going on behind my back. If they're
behind your back.
Mark
I mean,
comes in to snitch tag.
Yeah. So here's what I think. She said
she said
you should have taken out the answers that were too podcast specific.
But that's what the whole point of RNAP is, the navel gazing. The whole reason people love RNAP is the absurdity of.
Yeah, but that's fine. Then we could have had like all the insiders on and had a great time with the podcast.
The best person, the person who got the most points before Fast Money by far was Stephen Fischbach. So I don't. What are you talking about? Who knew nothing about anything?
Yeah, but we had to guess like the stupid ones for him to get the, you know, like.
Again, there were shoelaces, which was top answer for that one, 32 points.
The shoelace one blew Bryce's mind. That, like he was thinking,
yes,
like,
of course,
who is this person who can't tie their shoes? Like,
yes, I agree. That was the one that set you guys off.
It literally exploded his mind because then he had to assume
that
was like
RNAP specific.
Yeah,
the only other
king
one
of the mats,
RNAP
the whole king of the mats.
Pointer, so it's meaningless.
No, there was multiple. Matt Hoffman, Matt Liguori, those are both RNAP.
That's nothing to do with RNAP. What are you talking about?
Oh, you mean...
Those people have never been mentioned on RNAP. I don't even know who they are.
Matt Liguori was the guy who was on the Jersey Shore podcast. He messaged me and said, wow, he did such a great job.
Oh, I did?
Yeah.
Oh.
And then he heard you...
Famous, he's not famous for that. He's famous for... Didn't he win a whole season of Survivor?
No, Matt Liguori did not win a season of Survivor. He's one of, like, the me's in the... You know, he's on podcasts and stuff.
I thought Matt Liguori was on Survivor. I thought he won Survivor. I thought that's the whole point.
No. There was a Big Brother guy. No. No, Matt Liguori did not win Survivor.
Oh. Is Matt Hoffman? Did he win Survivor?
He was on Big Brother and he didn't win. There's no, I don't think there's ever been a
Wait,
Matt.
Matt Liguori was never on Survivor?
No, that's what we're saying. That he's
we were tweeting at each other back and forth. I said, I look forward to your season. His profile says he's like Survivor something champion.
No, you're mixing him up with something totally different. I don't even know what the hell you're talking about.
Liguori, the guy who I said on RNAP, I didn't know who he was, he tweeted at me. Do I have to go look at my
Yeah, we're going to look at here, and we got to go in a minute and set up for the next podcast. Yeah. But
anyway,
I think you're a crazy person. Yeah. What are you talking about? Hold on. Let's go look here.
Go find my Twitter conversation with Matt Liguori. He said, "Why do you not know who I am?" He didn't say that in those words. And then I said, "Hey, sorry, I've never listened to Survivor, watched Survivor until season Amazon." But then I clicked on him, I saw his name. His profile said something like "Survivor Champion," doesn't it? What does it say on a Twitter profile?
Okay, so Matt Liguori tweeted at you and said, "Ouch." And then you said, oh, no, sorry, I'd never...
Wait, hold on. I said that first. I clicked on his name to see who he was. What's his Twitter profile say?
Snakes, rats, and tweets. Survivor, the challenge. That's what he podcasts and blogs about. Survivor, the challenge, and Glee.
Oh, I thought it said Survivor Champion.
Oh, it said Survivor the Challenge. So, I'd never seen Survivor until I just watched Amazon the last couple weeks. I'm learning. I'm sure he replaced Von Erdfeldt as King of the Mets. So you thought. Oh, and then he played with it and said, you'll love my season someday. He.
I thought he was being serious. It's sincere. I thought he's like some Survivor guy.
He's like the RHP blogger. And he does podcasts.
Oh, okay. But again, that's not RNAP. That's RHAP.
Yeah, but not everyone knows RHAP. Like Steven is on it, but he doesn't know who Matt Liguori is necessarily, or Bryce doesn't know. I mean, maybe they do,
well,
but
neither
like
do I, apparently.
Yeah, so okay. That's what I'm saying. It's an insane, and Missy doesn't. Missy doesn't watch these shows.
I didn't know who
these people were. You
don't
know
Missy.
But that's why I told you. That's why I told you.
Hold on a second.
No institutional knowledge of RNAP.
If you were to ask a generic Family Feud question, like name the best show on TV, it would have been 75% for Survivor. Because like again, if you didn't want it to be,
I agree. That's why you can't. Can't ask that question.
Don't survey RHAP
I agree.
Listeners,
that's why
you
can't answer.
To do.
So ask, what is your favorite color? That ask questions like that that will have no impact on the very focused user group.
Then why are we asking the question?
Because it's there.
And the consultant waste so many hours doing that.
Because it's there. Because there's no reason. Also because a lot of like Nicole's a big Family Feud fan. She might have seen every episode.
I don't have to defend this. My perspective is that the majority was on my side. Again, that's related to people in the Patreon WhatsApp group and people mentioning my name on Twitter. So if I'm very wrong, if you're listening to this and you think that I did a terrible job,
can I do a poll? Can I do a poll on my Twitter? Or is that too inside baseball?
I mean, again, I'm going to lose any poll on your Twitter, but that's fine. It's your Twitter.
I lose a lot of polls on my Twitter. Did Alex Chester do a good job as host of what? You could phrase the question. Did Alex Chester do a good job as host of Family? Now, I will say the PowerPoint was good. You're very good at the math like that. Yeah. So I do think
apparently not so good at the math.
Yeah. But I do think I picked the right person. I just need like 7 babysitters for you, which I tried. Even you were even like, hey, I want to just show them to somebody.
So again, to be clear, I did not write the questions. And also, let me point something else out just for the record.
Yeah.
The biggest problem, and I did mention this at the top of the podcast, it's so hard to write a good Family Feud question.
Yeah, that's interesting. But we had 25 for that reason.
The answers are so diffuse. We had 28 questions. Mm-hmm. For more than half of them, no answer had more than 10% of the vote.
Wow.
So you can't say top 17 answers on
the board.
Yeah,
so then we're asking bad questions. 9, 8, then we're not asking the right questions if you're not at 10 higher than 10%. Because there's never been...
Well, I'm not throwing anyone under the bus, but I added a couple questions, but the majority of the questions were not written by
me. Yeah, there's never been a Family Feud regular question in the history of the show that I've seen that the winning answer has 10.
Akiva, you're missing the point. How many Family Feud questions do you think there are asked in order to get to the ones that are on the show?
I agree. So next time we have
to ask
50 questions.
So we have 28 and we picked the best 4.
Okay.
And they, to pick the best 4 every week, probably have 500.
You're probably
right. By the way, also,
now we know.
They definitely manipulate the numbers. Because at a few points, I thought about doing that, but because I'm such a stickler, I wouldn't allow myself to do so.
Yeah. Such a stickler, except you changed 6 different rules during the show to make it more exciting.
No, but I won't mess with the data itself, right?
Yeah.
By the way, I just want to say the dumbest people, and I know I'm calling out listeners, but I've already been doing that, so you know, whatever. I'm ruining my approval.
Your pristine
right
reputation.
Are the people? One of the questions was, "What's on the Mount Rushmore?" Did we do that question?
No, I don't think so. Mount Rushmore
was,
of what?
It was oh. Well, okay, I'm going to ruin this question for you. It's who's on the Mount Rushmore of TV pets?
That's a good question.
No, it's not, because no answer had more than 10 points.
Yeah, but that is a good... It's not a good Family Feud question, but it is a fun question to discuss.
Well, but yeah, it was a great question, and I thought I was definitely going to use that one, except unfortunately the answer is way too diffuse.
It's too hard.
But anyways, a bunch of people... We had 309 people fill this out. At least 20 of those people wrote in 4 different names. Like 4 different people for the Mount Rushmore.
Mm-hmm. That's tough.
So I counted all 4. So with that one, actually, the vote was a little bit higher than 308. But like, how do they think this works? Like, each of the top four groupings of 4 on the board, like, they think someone's going to give the exact same 4 as them? You give one answer, boys and girls. Anyway, but listen, honestly, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
I like coming under an app and getting dunked on. I know that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But you're claiming that it was actually merited dunking and not just, you know, for fun against Chester.
You started a fight with Wiggler. Or you got into a fight.
No. Wiggler started
you got
a fight
into
with
a fight
me.
With Wiggler.
He started attacking me.
You guys got into a fight.
He was still.
You don't even, have no. If, you know what's interesting on, about you? On. You don't get mad, so you don't realize when people are mad at you because you've never, like, I'll, like, you know, Will, like, we used to get into huge fights on this podcast, and you were never, like, mad at me. And, like, I'm not speaking to you for a few days afterwards. Never once. Yeah. Which is, I'm saying something nice about you. But the alternative is you don't know when you're upsetting people because you don't even realize that you're upsetting people because they're like, oh, this wouldn't upset me, so I'm this can't upset them. That's how you think, I think.
But hold on. Josh was wrong. Josh was upset that the question about what would an average 36-year-old college-educated man not know how to do, I think that question was written by me, by the way, so that one is all on me. But Josh was mad that you got to answer that question. But that's Josh's team's fault.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree.
Yeah. And by the way, the best strategy in the game was to defer every time.
Yeah, because if there's 7 answers, it's so hard. It's so hard.
Yeah, and
you get 2 chances
again. I try to narrow it down as much as possible. The ones with the fewest answers were the ones that were unusable, by the way, like because they were too specific. Like one of them was on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being Scott Stapp from from Creed, and 10 being what's the lead singer from Sonic Youth? I forgot his name.
Jeff, I forget.
Kim Gordon. Yeah. Okay. So it was on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being Scott Stapp from Creed, and 10 being Kim Gordon from Sonic Youth. How cool is Akiva? So that one was very Renap specific. Do you want to guess the top answers, by the way, for that one?
I'm gonna say the top ones are 1 and 10, because those are the extremes.
Yeah, not even close.
Yeah, so that's people answer this very stupid question. Oh, that's not it?
Yeah, well, the reason it's a stupid question is because my consultant pointed out to me, is because it's just you're totally randomly guessing. The top three answers were 7, 4, and 8.
Yeah, I did guess 7.
So that's ungettable. Those are just random numbers.
I kind of like that question. Just about anybody. It's like, how cool is that person? Any sort of 1 to 10. But all 10 probably had, like, were there 10 numbers on the board? You only put the top 7 maybe on the board.
No, I only put those three on the board, actually, because I was trying to have questions where there's only 3 or 4 answers on the board, so they wouldn't all have 7. So for that one, I was only going to do 7.
Interesting. Okay. All right, let's go. Yeah. But this was a little fun behind the scenes. Okay.
All right, I will talk to you again in 1 minute on another podcast.
Bye.
Bye.
Mm-hmm.